Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to the public humiliation of Vithushan Ihantharaja, also known as the Football Ramble. It's Monday the 15th of August. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Vithushan Ihantharaja.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday, the 15th of August, otherwise known as the 30th birthday of the Premier League. And it seems very apt that Vish is here exactly 30 years to the day where Manchester United were bottom of the Premier League table on that very day, as they are today, Vish.
My only, I don't know, the only solace I could take from coming in today was that potentially you wouldn't be here because it's not on TV. But then I remember there are cameras here.
Well,
so.
I just
hey,
thought it's Jules.
I only do Mondays. It's the only day we're filmed.
Jules' first day at game of the first ramble of the season as well. So welcome. What a
thank
day you picked.
Yeah. It's good
welcome
to be
back.
Here. It is so good to be here.
So I don't imagine Vish, your highlight of the week's going to include anything from the Man United game, but that doesn't mean we're not going to cover it in detail.
I might take after one of our most famous players of the modern era and leave at half time. Good idea.
Good idea.
I think that is where we should start then with our highlights of the weekend. Vish, I'll save you for last. Jim, you went and watched your beloved Arsenal. I imagine that's your highlight.
That was a strong part of it because I was having a lovely Saturday morning. I watched an episode of All or Nothing, saw a police horse in it. I was like, I know that horse. I know that horse from the ground. Then went down to the ground, saw the horse. So that felt nice. There was a lovely buzz at the Emirates. Then after the game, went to the Canterbury Tavern and watched Vish watch the Man United game on his phone as the goals piled in.
I was sitting there thinking when this was happening and I heard that you watched him watching it, I thought this should be a patron. we'd hoover up the Patreon.
Missed a chance there.
Yeah. Well, we can watch you re-watch it, maybe. We'll put it on the Patreon.
This is basically going to be a bit of a humiliation for you, Vish has said in the intro, isn't it?
He doesn't think it's going to go that way.
I feel you're
going to presumably launch some kind of vociferous defence of the club that you've supported since you were a boy.
Well, I mean, we'll save it for the main show, but I've predicted this is the main bit of the main show. I've predicted this on Friday. But
does that make you feel better that you predicted it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. If you know the world's ending, you're like, look, I told you, you know, you're still going to go down with everyone, but at least you can be smart for 10 minutes. Can I do my highlight just to get out of the way? Because I just remembered it because it kind of linked to Jim's one, because I was also at the Arsenal game with him. And I don't know if you heard this on Match of the Day, but during the game, there was a chant going around, Jamie Vardy, your wife is a grass.
Nice.
Now, funny anyway, but Jim and I were sat next to a man and his daughter, and she was like, what are they singing? And so he explained from start to finish in the space of five minutes,
the
Rebecca Vardy, Colleen Rooney story. Yeah, and he nailed it. and she from then on started singing it.
How old was she?
She must have been about like 12 or 13, maybe. Genuinely incredible, yeah.
Tough world out there.
It was a great day.
Luke, what was your highlight, mate?
Mine is, you've already alluded to it, it was based around the 30th year anniversary of the Premier League, their 30th birthday, if you like. And I love the fact that Sky did a very skillful, quite long montage and VT and managed to do it without including anything to do with Andy Gray or Richard Keys. not a single word of Andy Gray commentary, not a single link from Richard Keys. And if anyone can please, you know, loop that out, take it, record it, I'll pay for the postage for it to go to Richard Keys. I'd love to see him watch that.
You know their reactions, like, they've cut us out. Yeah. Yes, Richard. They're very much. It's a conspiracy. They don't want to show us. Everyone gets that, Richard. Yeah. Why don't you understand this isn't a conspiracy?
It's not a conspiracy because everyone knows it and everyone agrees. there's no controversy here and there's no conspiracy. I'd love to see him watch that. I'd love to see him. Sadly, I need to report at the time of recording, he's not commented on that. Because we all know he watches every single second of Sky Sports output.
So hopefully, despite being on a bigger show,
exactly the biggest, and his show does the goals as they go in. So it was a shame. Jules. Yeah, Jules does as well, exactly. Yeah, and Jules didn't tell me to have a pop at Sky Sports. So I did it off my own back. So
I don't mind.
I know you don't. Yeah.
Let's get to some of your highlights, you guys at home. You've been sending these in. show@footballramble.com, and you can tweet us @footballramble. Fuzz Kaminsky says, my highlight was Scott Parker wearing a designer cardigan during an extreme weather warning. It was a bloody heat wave this weekend.
It was
34-ish degrees in London, and Scott Parker was wearing a very thick-looking cardigan.
But had stripes on one arm.
He wore the jacket equivalent last week.
Right, yeah. So I had to look this up. Now,
I thought it was Adidas, but it's not, no.
Well, I consider myself as, you know, quite fashion forward.
Really?
Mm. Oh, don't look at me like that, Luke. And I didn't know what this brand was, so I typed into Google 4 stripes on left arm.
I thought it was 3.
Was it three or four?
No, it's four.
Wait, it's four, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a brand called Thomas Brown, and the jumpers are like nearly $2,000.
Yeah.
It's an absolute joke.
And they didn't have
a common... You're going to get some in the post now, is that what this is?
No, I don't know if they do.
That's
women.
Thomas Brown.
With an E on the end, by the way.
He didn't even have the common decency to sweat through it like Pep Guardiola did.
Yeah. That's why that City badge melts.
Yeah, exactly.
On that shirt. It's just a force
of Guardiola's sweat, yeah.
It's got to be a sponsors thing now because...
It must be. Yeah. I think Roy Keane was wearing one last year in the Euros.
So they're making big moves. They're making big moves with the influencers, men of a certain age. I am a man also of that age, so if you want to send it over.
Yeah. Arlene says, seeing my mate have his pasty pinched from his hands by a seagull at Plymouth against Peterborough. They are savage vermin of
the You'll struggle to find a bigger southwest of England story than that. That is the most textbook southwest of England story I've ever heard.
Also another nice South Coast story at the Brighton-Newcastle game.
Here we go.
Fans were actually throwing... So they've actually put like a partition between the away fans and the home fans at Brighton now. Bit naff in it, right. But anyway, they've done it, and they were fans with their tops off, and they were sharing sun cream over the partition, throwing it over to each other.
That is
quite
nice.
Sweet, isn't it?
Unlike a city where they banned it.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird that, right? Blaze says, "I had sexy highlights, but they got yanked out by Romero."
How did he get away with that? More on that later.
Yeah, we are going to talk a lot about the battle at the bridge, round two. That is coming up in the second part of the show. But obviously, there's only one place to start. Brentford 4, Manchester United 0. Possibly the worst 35 minutes of Manchester United Premier League football that we've ever witnessed, Vish?
It's got to be, yeah. Certainly in my lifetime, which spans that era. But it was very, very bad, yeah.
And are you over it yet?
You know what? I was kind of over it by the end of half-time because I got to a stage where I was like, you know what, they should... They've got to learn from this, so they need to concede more. I said after the way we were playing with the second goal, I turned to Jim. I was, you know, when he was watching me watch it in the pub, and I was like, this could be the 9-0. This could be the seasonal 9-0 because United are so out of sorts. And I did see this start coming. Obviously, the way they conceded those four goals was like a joke. But
did it make it better or worse that you were watching on your phone, so it was slightly delayed, so you got WhatsApp notifications before you saw the goal
constantly, yeah. And also, just the not knowing... So there was a moment. So it was the Jensen goal, I think, when...
The second one?
Yeah, so the second goal. So Brentford had a free kick. It was when Maguire takes out Tony and he gets a yellow card. And... The WhatsApp message comes down.
I forgot about that.
The WhatsApp message comes down, and it was a mate of mine who's also a lifelong United fan, and he just went, "This is the worst thing I've ever seen." And the free kick goes over the bar, so I was like, "Oh, okay, maybe it's just like generally." And then from the goal kick, like two touches from the goal kick is in the net.
Also, as well, 1-0 down, edge of the box. Take a booking.
exactly. Have you turned?
Panic setting that.
Have you turned a situation into such a positive situation, such a negative one, so violently as well? Like so, like almost like from nowhere. The horror movie equivalent of when the horror film just goes bang like that, and you shit yourself.
Yeah.
That's Harry Maguire every minute of every game.
There's also like we'll go on to talk about Erik ten Hag here, and I would say this like first of all to caveat.
I actually
everything.
Thought at one point it was going to be Erik 10-0.
Yeah. Well, he's now Erik Eight Hag. It's hard to say. Erik Eight Hag because he's lost two now.
The phrase, what on earth is going wrong at Manchester United, is in the running order this week. And it's kind of as common as welcome to the football ramble, isn't it?
Copy and paste.
Yeah, it's mad at this point. And I think the kind of pre-match comments even were fairly telling, with Ten Hag being fairly vociferous about how he's kind of unhappy with the transfer strategy, and you know that sort of pointed comment normally comes before January, you know, like with an established manager. It's kind of rare that something like this happens so early. And I think the season has barely started, really. We're two games in, and this is already an era for Man United full of problems and contrition. They had an opportunity for a fresh start and a clean slate, and this is the board, and they fucked it already.
He started early. Like remember, he started early as well.
Yeah, he had a long run up at this, and the transfer strategy appears to have just been. Well,
I think he's compounded the problems. Like he's definitely compounded the problems, Ten Hag. But I don't think you can. I mean, I don't really see. I mean, the players themselves. I found the conversation between Jamie Redknapp and Gary Neville really interesting after the game. And look at me.
I'm surprised Vish is looking us in the eye.
Yeah, and because there seemed to be a lot of talk around whether it was the board and whether Joel Glazer needs to front up and the stuff that you're talking about, Jim, about how you know the responsibility comes from the top. And I think that's generally a fair point. I think you know you really have to set the standard and you have to you know support the manager you've literally just hired, of course. But on the other hand, it doesn't really matter what player comes in if they're going to come into that environment, in my assessment. I mean, you look at, it doesn't matter how good the players are, really. If they're going to equip themselves in that way, particularly away from home, they'll get absolutely destroyed every week. I mean, it's not an exaggeration, I don't think, to say that as we sit here now, Manchester United are like the worst team in the league. Mm. And the reason they're like the worst team in the league is because they're in an environment where it seems to be like de rigueur to not run and to not try hard and to not acquit yourself. And it doesn't, I mean, you can talk about the protracted saga with Frankie de Jong all you want, but it's just window dressing, really. Because if Frankie de Jong's going to come into that situation where the standards are so low...
Yeah, one player doesn't completely change the mood, does it?
Yeah, he can't lift the whole thing.
But I think Frankie de Jong is emblematic of where United are here at the moment, because we could... You know, as Jim said, it's a conversation that's come up quite a lot in the last couple of seasons. And it's always, you always end up ticking the boxes of like ownerships, internal hires, which aren't very ambitious, lack of joint-up thinking from front to back or top to bottom. But there is like there is an arrogance at the core of United, which it's almost Trump-esque, whereby they think no one individually thinks they're the problem.
Yeah.
No one acknowledges their own shortcomings, and no one wants to take responsibility. And also, you know, when you get out there with the 11 that come on the pitch, they kind of think, because of the shirt, of the badge rather than the shirt, that they're like, okay, we should beat these. You know, they only got promoted last year. We should beat these. And I would also say that, like, the Frankie thing is very much like, okay, so he's a big name, we're a big name, he's the kind of player we should get, rather than thinking like, I think he made absolutely the right move into where he went. So, like, attracting a player like this is a completely different matter altogether. But, like, Bissouma, don't think you're too good for players like that. Yeah. Just because a guy's at Barcelona and he's, you know, one of the brightest midfield prospects in the world, don't try and go for those players. Have a bit more sense. But it does speak of, you know, someone made this point the other day, I think it was Adam Crafton on Twitter, who wrote a really good piece after this match on The Athletic. He wrote about they either go for... Actually, sorry, it was either him or Jonathan Wilson, but they both have the same point where they're United are either going for names or people that Ten Hag knows.
Yeah.
And that speaks of like, they're going to do this and I want to do that. And rather than coming together and finding the middle ground, they're just doing their own thing.
But Vish, that's my point about, you come on nicely onto the point I was just going to make about Ten Hag compounding the problem, which I was just going to finish off by saying, because obviously that's how I started the point, is that all these problems exist, and we know they exist, and you can see them a mile off. I do think it's a special kind of naivety or arrogance from Ten Hag, one of the two, obviously I don't know him, so it could be either, where he thinks Lisandro Martinez is going to solve these problems at centre-back. Like, the man is built like a fucking human feather. He cannot play in the Premier League unless he overcomes some quite massive and obvious physical challenges, and he's next to like a rusty old World War II tank and Harry Maguire.
Support around him, doesn't he?
But so, you need to play with you need to have possession to get away with playing someone like that.
Yeah.
So like, he might thrive at Man City, but he's not going to do well.
Exactly. Well, I can see why he would play well in a possession dominant team in a back three. Right, I get that. He's obviously got a lot of quality. There's no one's questioning whether he's a good footballer or not. But the point is, like, without trying to sound like Graham Souness, you know, on a bad day. In the Premier League against Brentford, who were notorious for being so strong at set pieces, so physical, so hardworking. It's what Thomas Frank demands and has demanded of that team since they've been promoted, because that's what he needs for them to stay up. He got absolutely bullied. It was fucking dinner money everywhere. Like, it was the worst physical performance I've seen for such a long time from a modern Premier League defender. And they've got so many problems throughout that team. I tell you who's escaped a lot of criticism as well is Bruno Fernandes, who seems so angry all the time that every time he gets the ball, he just smashes it as hard as he can, thinking he's going to score. The amount of times in these two games, you see him take a touch, look up, and just smash it as hard as he can to try and score.
Yeah.
You've got Ronaldo obviously doing Ronaldo. He needs to go. They need to get. I don't care how many goals Ronaldo scored last season. They need to get him out of the team. He needs to go.
I would say Ronaldo is the lowest on the list of those top four problems. And I'd say top of it isn't Bruno. It's Marcus Rashford.
Rashford looks totally gone.
Yeah.
He looks totally gone.
Can I just say, though, just if we go back to last week and try and kind of put the two games together, because they're two defeats against hashtag teams like Brighton and hashtag teams like Brentford, who
Manchester City... four points in second halves this season.
Who Man United should, on paper, supposedly be beating. That opening game of the season against Brighton... Obviously it's a 90-minute game, but the first 10 minutes, United actually looked okay. They started the game quite brightly. And I think a lot of the problem with Manchester United is about confidence. They've been, they're so down that they then started that game, new season, Brightley, right, come on. And then after about 10 minutes, when as soon as they start losing the ball, they're like, ah, actually, yeah. this is really bad again. And then they revert back to tight.
And you fill in on that and you go, there's probably, I think from the Brentford game alone, and I can't quite remember if there are any changes from the Brighton game or how many there were, there's probably seven first-team players in that team that started against Brentford who've got really obvious difficulties at the moment. And we haven't even mentioned David De Gea yet, who basically essentially gifts Brentford what he gifts them. And Man United, as you said, you are so fragile, there's no way they can recover. And then you look at the reaction when someone like Ronaldo, the only way Ronaldo can continue to contribute and really lift that team up, you know, obviously the goals are important, but he has to set an example. If you watch him when he gives that ball away for the first Brentford goal, I think it's the first goal, he's just throwing his arms up in the air, looking around, like, and then when they concede the goal, they're all just like resigned to it. There's no one running up to De Gea, put his arm around and going, come on, son, next one.
But it seems disjointed, doesn't it? It seems the sense that you see it happen with teams all the time when they're, you know, not going in the direction they want. They don't look like a unit. They don't look like there's that is 11 coherent players on a pitch. There's just sort of different disconnected sections of players who've all, you know, they're all pushing in different directions. And, you know, you sense that, you know, Ronaldo doesn't necessarily want to be there. Martinez is trying to fit in. Maguire's had his problems, as you say, like Rashford and Sancho also, like, it's just not really working for whatever reason. As you said, Fernandez seems angry. De Gea, obviously, like, there are so many individual issues. They just look like 11 depressed individuals in their own heads about things that aren't football.
Yeah.
How do you fix it, Vish?
I don't know. I was thinking about this yesterday and, because Brentford didn't actually have to play that well, although they had, like, everything they needed to do well, they did brilliantly.
Mm. Yeah.
And because it was the fourth goal, it maybe got lost, just how good that counter-attack was.
Yeah.
Like, from Jensen turning in his own box, playing that ball out wide. Tony
the
played
ball
that ball
from
first
Tony
time
was amazing,
as well.
Wasn't it?
The fourth goal was the most damning indictment of the whole thing because it was basically a pure classic Man United breakaway goal.
Yeah.
From back in the 90s.
Powered by confidence.
It was like, we scored three, here's the fourth, this is what you used to be like.
Yeah.
But it was also, I think it also spoke of some of the things that Brentford weren't very good at last year. In fact, until they signed Eriksen, was they went through a stage where they just defended. And they went through a phase of like just Mbeumo and Tony, you are two attackers. Mm. And it didn't quite work because Mbeumo wasn't that great in front of goal.
Yeah.
And the way he finished out, obviously, was very good. But in terms of like United, like hand on heart, they'll be totally fine going forward because they've weirdly future-proofed themselves in almost like this new football economy whereby they've got all the marketing deals. They've got the name, and literally, it will be one of those things that carries forward to the extent that it might, you know, when the Glazers eventually do decide that they have enough of it, there will be a nation state there waiting to pick them up. Yeah. There will be some kind of despot, and so like I don't, in terms of like the future, I'm not really that arsed about it. But in terms of like now, it doesn't really seem like there's any way out of it because, right, you know, let's say they sack Ten Hag in a couple of months' time, you know, who would want that job anymore? And it was quite interesting.
They'd have to go for like a classic like United legend or something.
But you can't, yeah. And then, but like from a United fan's point of view, like, actually, you don't want that. You want someone like a Conte who comes in and like torches the place from the inside.
But the thing is, this is the thing about Conte, right? He makes them better because he's a good manager. He can't fix this.
No. But that's what I'm saying. So torches it from the inside in terms of someone who knows how to play people upstairs in the way that, I'm not saying Conte specifically because, you know, he's otherwise occupied and United missed the boat with him anyway. But in terms of someone who comes in, you hear it all the time with, you know, you speak to ex-players all the time and they always talk about, sometimes they'll talk about a manager who comes in and knows how to play everyone above him, not just the players. Mm. And United have always struggled with that type of person. Mourinho, like Ralph tried to do it at the start and then couldn't be asked. It was a decent retirement package for him. Van Gaal, way back in the day, started it and thought, you know what, it's not worth my while now. But that's the only way I can see it being sorted out. But otherwise, probably not really. No.
It was particularly enjoyable to listen to a lot of Man United fans on the 606, just absolutely raging. It was one of the most angry phone-ins I've ever heard in my life. The top three ideas from Man United fans about how to sort this out. I promise you, I'm not making this up. Don't let the players eat until they win. One was put them in the centre circle at half time without water. And the final one, which is in many ways the most severe, and a lot of them said this, just get Roy Keane in. He will probably, presumably, do both those things.
Yeah. I was speaking to another United mate on Sunday, and he just simply said, the first message of the morning, he was like, it's weird because I was being told that they were eating lunch together, so I don't know what's happened here. As if that was going
to
solve it.
Yeah. Jim, can you lend some support to Vish? Because this time last year, Arsenal were bottom of the table, but United do have Liverpool a week today.
Yeah, but How's that going to go? Arsenal lost their first three games, and that could well happen here, couldn't it, for that reason. But I think, essentially, it's never as bad as it looks like it's going to be, particularly at Man United, because as you mentioned, they are future-proofed in this way. They get more free hits than any club, really, in a sense. But they have to change the culture there. And that sort of togetherness that we're now seeing at Arsenal that has come from some tough decisions from Mikel Arteta that he got a lot of criticism for and bore the brunt of, that has to start happening at United. And I think Ten Hag's trying to do that by bringing in his own people. Obviously, they need to join up their transfer strategy, which is so easy for me to say, but it does look like it's a bit scattergun and the coach wants something and other people want other things. But I think it's going to have to get worse before it gets better.
They are doing that. I mean, people complain about this fucking old, this recruitment. They spent a ridiculous amount of money. And more recently, since Ten Hag's been there, the very start of the summer, they've signed the players he wants. They've signed Malacia. They've signed Martinez. They're going to sign, we'll try to sign De Jong. These are all players that Ten Hag wants. The problem is the environment they're going into. It's not to do with the players. There's no way that those players don't have the quality. People talk, I've spent all week listening to people saying, oh, it's the players aren't good enough. Fucking Gabby Wanderhoor on TalkSport. Oh, the players aren't good enough. Are you fucking mad? The players are really good quality. They're just in a terrible environment. And they're being put through some awful fucking working practices, probably, and there's no standards.
Yeah, I mean, some of the players are really quite bad.
After two games in charge, it's hard to say that, you know, that's entirely Ten Hag's fault, isn't it? He's now got to be the one who changes that. That's what I'm saying.
Every single one of those players is an established international footballer.
That doesn't mean anything now.
Why?
Because international football isn't some kind of, like, you know, consistent standard across the board, is it?
Okay, let me put it a different way then. Every single player has previously hit very high heights. Every single player has won trophies and hit high heights.
No, that's true either.
Tell me three players there that haven't done that.
Well, one of the most reliable players in terms of someone who's been consistently playing and, like, you know, he came on as like a remedy on the weekend, but starts a lot of games. McTominay.
Yeah.
You know, he's someone who has to be relied upon because it was a stage where United had this dearth of midfielders. Didn't really focus on it in their recruitment, and then. But I mean, it's not just one individual, is it?
Luke, I'd like to congratulate you because you actually got Vish to defend Man United. Then,
yeah, that
there
was part.
Of that defend was all Man part United, of the plan defend by Man saying United. McTominay's all right.
Defend Man United by slagging up one of their more consistent players.
Scott McTominay's played in the Europa League final.
I mean, that's not a measure of anything, is it?
Well, I mean, it looks a lot better than it does now. You're telling me you may not get to the Europa League final this year? They can't, but they could.
But that's not what you said. I'm saying, like, just because you play in a Europa League final doesn't necessarily make you a good player.
They're better than what they're showing. They're better than what they're showing.
But the point I'm making is that it's, you know, essentially these two games lay bare the job Ten Hag has to do. He now has to take that inside, ignore everything from outside, and just change that culture. It's the people. It's the way they feel about each other. It's the atmosphere when they go to work. That's got to change.
I'll tell you where there is a
good, I agree with that.
Where there's a good mood at the moment. Nottingham Bloody Forest. Yes. They have got their first win at home in the Premier League after 23 years away. They beat West Ham by 2-0, and they won't give two fucks that West Ham should have probably scored two or three goals. They got the win. They got the 3 points. And they're absolutely buzzing, Luke.
Yeah, that, I mean, on a different day, they could have lost that quite badly. Feels like an incredible...
I feel like I've learned nothing about them.
I was like, if I was a West Ham fan, I'd be thinking, what have we got to do here?
How did West Ham not score?
Even the goal Forrest scored.
Yeah, like an accident.
Yeah. So, Awan Iyi, who's their new signing at Forest, well, one of their 15 new signings at this point of recording. I think there's probably going to be a 16th signed today, which is insane. But Awan Iyi, who is one of their new signings, manages to score his debut Premier League goal. It came off his knee shin,
didn't it?
Got very lucky, but he won't care.
Miss kick from Jesse Lingard bounced in off him. They'll take it.
It's the
that is a sickener for West Ham, isn't it?
The scrappiest, most awful goal of the weekend. But it doesn't matter because, I mean, the City Ground was absolutely rocking, and it, you know what's quite nice when you've got newly promoted sides that haven't been in the Premier League for this long, you hear new songs. It sounds different, doesn't it?
I mean, I love the City Ground. It looks like an amazing place to go and watch a game. I've not been there. I'd like to visit. Look, it seems a bit churlish to say anything like this because of Forest are picking up their first win in the Premier League. And, you know, I don't know how many times in the broadcast I heard the phrase 23 years, but it's quite a lot.
I've said it twice already.
There was a lot spoken about Brian Clough looking down on them as well.
They play that video before every game.
Yeah.
And they added to it for the montage for the start of the new season, but it's like played out every game.
But they're not suggesting that the ghost of Brian Clough is helping them win, though, are they, when they play that video?
I'm just saying we don't know.
I just don't know that football commentary is a place for that discussion.
At one point, there was a green jumper flying over the stadium and people thought it was a sign, you know. I would like to say, again, at the risk of sounding churlish, I mean, they need to play a lot better than that to consistently pick up results. Because you look at top coaches now, they look at performances, don't they? And go, well, if you did the performances and we worked the game plan and we control the game, the results will take care of themselves. At no point were Nottingham Forest in control of that game.
No.
But yeah, look, they won the game and that's the most important thing. But I mean, it's not very often that, you know, you get a missed penalty after one's handballed basically on the line to stop it going in the first place. Then two free kicks at the underside of the bar at exactly the same place. You get disallowed goals for offside. For a foul, wasn't it? A McAntonio foul, which I thought was probably a foul, but it could have gone either way. So they very, very much rode their luck. And if they can build on that and take confidence from it, then it could be a real platform for them.
That's really key, isn't it? Because they're betting in, is it 15 players with potentially a few more coming in as well? Yeah. So that is such a Herculean task in terms of organisation.
Can I just say as well, I think the coverage of that has been a little bit incomplete. I think people have focused a lot on the fact they've signed all these players. They haven't focused on the fact that for various reasons, I think they lost 12 players, most of which they had no control over. You know, the goalkeeper
decided to go, and loan players went back.
They had to sign some players because if they hadn't have done that, the big narrative would have been, well, they haven't got any players. Mm. So they had to do something. And so maybe it will take time. I don't think it's the same as the Fulham thing famously a couple of years ago where they just decided to sign everyone they could. I think this is like a
I actually like some of the players they've signed as well. They've got some decent signings in there. I think some smart signings as well.
Nico Williams is a really smart move.
He looked busy. Lewis O'Brien's a superstar in waiting. He's got everything. He looks brilliant. He was brilliant all last season as well.
And Emmanuel Dennis is a striker
who
a lot of clubs were supposedly after. You know, we saw him score plenty of goals last year for Watford. They're unlucky to lose him, really, in the Championship. They've had a decent start, Watford. But, you know, there's been a lot of clubs that are after him and he's chosen to go to Nottingham Forest for a reason. So, I don't know. I think I'm intrigued
to see what they're going to do. I can work out the reason.
what was that, Lee?
If it's anything like the Jesse Lingard reason.
Loves his cricket. Trent Bridge run just across the road.
Did you see that West Ham fans were throwing fake money at Jesse Lingard?
Were they? Yeah. I did not see that.
Technically illegal, isn't it? You can't print fake money.
It probably is.
You should have the authorities look into that.
But I think if it's got a picture of Jesse Lingard on it, I'll make a print up. Because David Moyes was a bit cheeky, I thought, in the build-up, and I know why he did it. He said, we did everything we could, or we moved heaven and earth or whatever to try and sign Jesse. He knew how much we wanted him and all the rest of it.
Yeah. But he doesn't owe them anything, does he?
No, of course not.
It's strange, this reaction to me.
I mean, it's not... Do you know West Ham fans?
Do you know football fans?
Yeah, I can remember.
I expect too much. This is the problem.
Chelsea fans used to wave the old money, didn't they, when old Abramovich came in? Sickening.
Well, that Forest win over West Ham was one of two absolutely brilliant matches yesterday. We're going to focus on the Chelsea Spurs game after this.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
When you're a player, and I've been involved, we didn't win the league for 30 years at Liverpool, right? Just look at me when I'm talking to you.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
What was that?
That was it after the Man United game.
My God, it was brilliant. Gary Neville obviously came down from the commentary box after he'd done the comms on the game.
And was very dismissive of Jamie.
Oh, it was so good.
He's like, you're not even my favourite, Jamie. What the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah, he basically went off on this rant about the owners, and Jamie was basically saying it's the players' fault, and he would not... They went at each other, and it was such good telly.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was brilliant. Yeah, he said, look at me when I'm talking to you.
Gary Neville looked raging. And I don't think he expected Jamie to stand up for himself quite so much. And Jamie Reynolds is like a nice bloke, right? I'm not saying Gary isn't, but Gary's a lot more kind of forthright, isn't he? And I felt a bit like, yeah, nice one, Jamie. Get stuck in there.
You always get the impression Gary's a talker, not a listener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is always a
what
problem,
are you looking at me for?
Yeah. Second time this week that we've heard the whole look me in the eyes after Tuchel said it to Conte as well at the handshake at the end.
Oh my God,
we'll come on to that. Just before we get stuck into that game at Stamford Bridge, a reminder that the Football Ramble are hosting a watch along of Chelsea Liverpool in central London. We're all going to be there. It's on September the 18th. So if you'd like to join us to watch the Premier League giants do battle, sign up to our Friends of the Ramble tier for just $10 a month on our Patreon. And you've got to do it by next Monday. That's Monday, the 22nd of August. Friends of the Ramble patrons will be able to secure their free ticket to the event. So sign up to our Patreon by next Monday and don't miss out on watching the football with all of us. And hopefully, maybe Man United might have lost again by then and we can all
poke a bit of fun. Oh, certainly they would have been lost again by then.
Poke a bit of fun at Vish.
Man United playing Leeds that day at 2 p.m. It's not on TV. Because why would you put a relegation clash on TV
this early in the season?
To be fair, I can get it on TV. I can get it on my Premier League app.
Oh, I've got that as well. I won't be using it though.
I will.
I think there's a reasonable chance that by then Man United would have lost another 4 games.
I forgot how far away it was, actually.
Because I can't
see... me thinking it's next week.
I can't
it's literally a month away.
You look at their fixture list and go, OK, they're playing Liverpool next, fine.
Lost.
Southampton, that's away from home.
9-0.
Leicester's away from home. Then they're playing Arsenal. Crystal Palace away from home. It's hard to see them picking up more than 3 or 4 points in all that, Vic.
Can't even win at home to Brighton.
Come on. These runs never come to scratch.
Especially with all the great players they've
got. You say that. Do you remember last season, that clip where they were looking forward to like United winning? Like they looked forward to United's next 15 games over like November and into January, February. And they were like, they might only lose 2 of these. Lost basically every season.
patreon.com/footballramble. Make sure you sign up, get your tickets, etc. And we'll see you there. Right, let's talk about yesterday at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 2, Tottenham 2. What a bloody game. I could not take my eyes off this, guys. It was just brilliant. It was so good to watch.
We should bake the Premier League more often. Yeah. Like, it's been an incredible weekend. And, put heaters in the stadium if we have to in the winter.
Definitely. One thing I didn't expect was a really large amount of homoerotic punctuation from Graham Souness. Like, he was beside himself. He was almost like in a frenzy, wasn't he? At one point, he just got really carried away and he was like seething at how good it was. And he just went... we got our game back today. Men at it. Yeah. Men at it. And it's like, that's really tone deaf given what's happening in the summer.
And by the way, big love to Karen Carney, who sat there and just sort of raised her eyebrows.
Brilliant. Which says more than you could ever say anyway.
Exactly.
And I mean, David Jones was trying to chip in and go, look, you know, it's a women's game as well. It was tone deaf. I don't think Graham meant anything sort of bad by it. He was so excited that, you know, he thought there's a reasonable chance at some point today someone might be killed in a gladiatorial way, and he was really up for it, and he's just looking around like, who else is up for it?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was in a frenzy, absolute frenzy.
He was so giddy, it was like his Google search had come to life.
Finally. I was thinking, the man is 70 next year. Look at the energy in him.
Well, Antonio Conte after the game said, you're here to try to kill the opponent in a sporting way. So yeah, that's probably what's happening.
In a sporting way. Don't worry, it'll be in a sporting way.
I mean, the thing is, though, I think the reason why it was so good and why tempers flared so much and why it was so emotional is because it was one of those games that did have absolutely everything. I mean, there were goals that shouldn't have been allowed. There were tackles flying in. Yeah. There were brilliant finishes. The Koulibaly first goal was unbelievable.
Outrageous. What a goal,
I mean, there was hair pulling. There was the whole lot. It was
the Koulibaly volley set the tone because it quite nearly took Raheem Sterling's head off. Raheem Sterling, who's got the reactions of a professional sports at the top level, only just got out of the way of it. Jamie Redknapp would say it literally gave him a haircut. it was an incredible game. I think
something for the weekend.
Yeah. Chelsea were the better team. I think Chelsea would come away from that thinking, how did we not win that? But you know, I don't know if it's too much to read into it to say that the Conte factor is a big part of this.
Massively.
Spurs stuck into it. They stuck at it and they really refused to be beaten, didn't they?
So, you know, all the talk we heard over the summer of like the absurd fitness things they were going through, and Spurs only really came into that game in the second half, get an equaliser in the 96th, 97th minute. Mm. All these things paid dividends, especially this early in the season as well.
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, the Conte and Tuchel, that kind of prime Wagyu beef. To me,
give me some of that Wagyu.
To me, that like really sums up how well they did to get him and what he's done to this team. Because one of the things that Spurs players were talking about, maybe even a month after they got him and they had like the start of the season with Nuno, was that to see your manager acting like on the sideline is actually quite inspiring. Like, fuck, you are up for this.
If I'm a Spurs player, I'm going into the training ground today and I'm like, boss, you absolutely nailed that yesterday.
What's next?
I'll be like, come on, I'll go again.
They'll be chatting about it on the WhatsApps last night. They'll be in training this morning or this afternoon, making jokes about
it. In amongst all the Man United memes. Yeah. Probably.
But like, it really has that binding quality that you don't really see, but clearly for them it's huge. And they're going to love the fact.
Everything.
They're going to love the fact that Tuchel was so rattled in his post-match interview and also talking about how they didn't deserve it. Because they probably know deep down they didn't deserve it, but they got it.
It feels better when you don't deserve it.
Well, that's it. There is that sense, absolutely, that they are going to get something if they just keep pushing. And it seems weird to say, given that they conceded two goals, and as I agree, Luke, that Chelsea were the better side, but Spurs are really tough to break down. I think they're going to be very comfortable against most teams, and that's you know,
and if you look
really
at their
annoying, actually.
Their general record against Stamford Bridge is poor, right?
Yeah.
So this is
a big blow.
Big thing for them. And in recent years, there's been disappointment for them at Stamford Bridge as well. And sorry to bring it back round and sort of extend your punishment, Vish, but if you look at that application compared to the application
Don't
of Man
sorry.
United, it's like if Spurs, that application that Spurs showed against Chelsea there it was just unbelievably high. Like, it was really high. And especially on such a hot day as well. And it was really fiercely competitive. I love the Tuchel versus Conte thing as well.
Oh.
That's what we need. You need that. You need
two red cards.
It's the classic the TV channels have to do. It say, you know, these are scenes you don't like to see. But Jamie Carragher just went, I loved it. Bloody loved it. Everyone else loved it. We all loved it.
It's funny though. We've got four elite managers in this league. And they finished top four last season. And I like the idea that the top two are, like, probably thinking of themselves as too good for that kind of scrap. And Conte and Tuchel are like, nah, fuck it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to look me in the eye when you shake my hand. I'm not.
My favourite thing about that, though, is the way that when Tuchel doesn't let go of Conte's hand, it's like he becomes an animal.
Yeah.
Like instantly, it goes from just like blank face to just 100% rage immediately. It's the quickness of the transition I've never seen before.
He flipped like a switch, and Tuchel's definitely got that in him to be very, very emotional.
I love it.
Yeah.
But
and a bit snide as well.
I was quite proud of him. I thought you don't want that smoke. I thought he'd never have it in him to get the Conte smoke.
You know what I liked about it?
But he wanted it. He wanted it.
Yeah, what I liked about it is that so their post-match interviews were very different. So Conte basically said it's not important, don't want to talk about it. Tuchel, on the other hand, was like, hey, we're just emotional. It's fine. This is, you know, like when we're passionate, this is what happens. And I like that because that's actually a genuine answer for it. That is actually what happened.
Yeah.
But Conte was like, you know what? I'm not going to say anything to you lot that are asking me the questions. Instead, I'm going to put it on Instagram.
He took it to the gram, didn't he?
He took it to the gram. Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, he posted the video of Thomas Tuchel celebrating Chelsea's 2-1 goal where he did the Mourinho and ran down, celebrated with the fans, and he ran past Conte in the process of doing that. But Conte actually had his head down, so at the time didn't see him run past, and he actually Instagrammed it and said, lucky I didn't see you, making you trip over would have been well deserved, with three laughing emojis.
You really have to properly categorize Conte's rage, because when he got the red card, he just didn't notice. For ages afterwards, he didn't know he'd been red carded because he was so like tunnel visioned about
he went
it.
Straight down
everything
the tunnel.
He could see was red.
He didn't go straight down the tunnel. He had a little to do with Azpilicueta as well.
Yeah,
did he?
The nicest man in the
mates,
stadium.
Who are mates as well. Yeah. Apparently, he's his mate.
Oh,
well.
Really?
Yeah, okay. But he didn't look like that. Yeah, but just to talk about the game very briefly, I mentioned that I thought they were on the wrong end of some decisions. I mean, I wasn't personally that unhappy with the challenge on Havertz in the build-up. I thought he played
Bentancur,
the ball.
That yeah. one.
I thought he played the ball, and I think
he does go through his ankle before getting the
ball. But if you look, I think I could see it either way, but if you look at how referees have looked at it this season, they're trying to get the game flowing. I think the reason for that is because they want the ball to be in play more, and they want more football, which I think is fair enough generally, providing the safety of the players is looked after, of course. But I thought the Richarlison one was a difficult one. That's an example of the laws of the game, get themselves in trouble, not really knowing what to do, because it's a little bit farcical if you break it down to its component parts and say, well, he's not interfering. He fucking is. He's a strike on the penalty area, and he means that the reaction time of the goalkeeper is a lot later. So it's definitely interfering.
I also think there's one of the things they don't look at with interference, what they should do is, obviously, where Richarlison is governs where Koulibaly is. Mm-hmm. So if Koulibaly isn't quite...
Koulibaly can't afford to leave him there.
Yeah, if Koulibaly isn't in that position, Mendy has a clearer view, and also there isn't that deflection there. And now we're getting into the weeds of it, and I think that's...
Boring,
Yeah.
No, but I think it's...
It's part of it, isn't it?
And I would also...
Great
just,
finish, though.
I'd finally... Well, yeah, it was a great finish. But, the keeper saved that, he's not blocked. And the Cucurella one... I understand the laws of the game, and I understand this is perhaps a bit boring for listeners, but if you'll forgive me just for a sec, I get it, but you're making people you're making yourself look stupid. The VAR officials, the referee, the officials, the laws of the game people are making themselves look stupid by that going unpunished, I think. And that's got to be mentioned, because I don't see how he gets away with no punishment at all for that. There's just no real justification for it, I don't think.
As Van Gaal said a while ago, it's very common in sexual matters.
Nostalgic days for you, right? Surely.
He said only then it's allowed.
Yeah.
I don't want to know what you think is allowed in those situations, LVG. No, thank you. Yeah. By the way, just going back to the little scrap between Tuchel and Conte, one of my favourite parts of the coverage was when Sky threw down to Jeff Shreves
because
he supposedly had a better view of the incident, and when they threw to him, he knew less than what we all saw. It was hilarious.
Jeff Shreves, it was almost like inversely proportional. The closer he gets to the incident, the less he knows about it. Need to put him in fucking New Zealand, he'll know more.
Just put him in New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly.
Leave him there. Mic.
Also, like Sky Sports can't go from 1 minute talking about their super high def cameras, every angle, and then go like, right, and here's a 55-year-old man to tell you what happened.
Can I just say, it is really difficult as a reporter in those situations when they say to you in the studio, can we come to you? And you're like, well, I've seen the same thing you've seen, so what do you want me to
Jules,
add?
Jules, there's simply no reason for Jeff to be there.
Okay.
There's no need for him to be anywhere.
I'm just defending my fellow...
The reason he's still working is because he's on holiday when all the shit went down. As rumour says. As rumour has it, the reason he's still working there is because he was on holiday and there was like some kind of weird loophole or something. But I also thought Martin Tyler let himself down when he said...
That was the first time recently.
Yeah, where he said... too much sun, not enough son.
His puns are getting worse, aren't they?
No, I can't be dealing
and,
with that.
And the co-commentator just doesn't know what to say. Because what would you say? Do you know what I mean?
It's like, I mean, exactly.
I think they should start saying, that was a bit shit, that one. It would be quite funny.
Oh, fuck off! Like that. Just do that, yeah.
I say that.
Yeah.
We're taking your Werther's originals now. That was shit.
Yeah.
Right, Jim. Now's your time.
You've been very patient.
We've saved it till last. Arsenal 4, Leicester 2. Gabriel Jesus should have had at least a hat trick. He was unbelievable in the game. You were there together, you two, having a lovely day out before Manchester United.
Generally, I had a brilliant weekend. And then there was like an hour and a half in the middle. Half an hour in the middle.
35 minutes to be specific. Yeah. Jim, how much are you loving Arsenal so far?
So, it's so good because I was at the equivalent fixture last year when we lost to Chelsea, and the difference. I mean, there was a sense still that things were slightly different then, but it was still. Well, actually, no, it was right in the eye of the storm of that three games we lost where everyone's like, oh, God, this is the worst start ever. It's terrible, blah, blah, blah. I was still quietly optimistic. But even so, this is what all of Arteta's work has been leading to, really, to get a team that's his team functioning in the way he wants to play with players that are just playing for each other. They're dynamic. It's fun. You know, mm-hmm. The atmosphere in the stadium was one of the most important things. It's louder. Everyone's positive. People are forgiving of things. You know, William Saliba's got so much credit in the bank that he can score an own goal on his home debut.
Fine.
It's just fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was weird, though.
I wonder if he might. Just like, you know what? This is how good I am. Yeah. I'm going to give them a head start and they're not getting past me
again.
Stick
one on his own net and then as he's going to get the ball out to the fans behind the goal, I am really good. Fish, you want to do a sue at the end of the show today?
Oh, I never wanted to do a sue when it was going well.
but the feeling there is amazing. And the Cabbages is his first goal.
It's so good, isn't it? I don't think
Arsenal scored a goal like that last season. He starts to move himself out wide. The finish itself, he's got players around him. It's a really tight space in which to even get his foot into the position to do it.
Scooped it up.
Unbelievable.
It also, for Arsenal, if I could be a little bit high-minded just for a moment, it kind of means a lot to Arsenal for that kind of goal because in that golden period they had, a lot of that stuff was built on, obviously, an amazing team that won a lot of stuff, but these like really hallmark, standout, outrageous solo goals from Bergkamp, from Henri, from these types of players, even Pires, perhaps Ljungberg as well. That's part of the fabric of a modern Arsenal, right? Mm-hmm. And so for him to do that, I think signifies a lot more than just him scoring a goal. And I also think, and I said this to you guys on the WhatsApp, not in so many words, but I kind of mentioned it, that you wonder whether Jesus is much more suited to playing for Arsenal than perhaps a systemic approach that Man City have, where he plays this bit part here and there and he does his thing. He never really let him down, always scored goals. Now he's been unleashed. And I think he could have a really, really successful season.
He can do things that no one else at the club last season was able to do, even Aubameyang.
Aubameyang just did not want to do them either.
Well, yeah, I think he just became really static towards the end of his time there, weirdly, which wasn't the case when he joined. But Jesus is the opposite of that. He's buzzing around everywhere. You know, he's
confidence, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Seven pre-season goals.
Already,
you're going to go into the season feeling good, aren't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. He's already bringing more out of Martinelli as well. Now, Martinelli, you know, he won the ball that led to the move with his goal, which was fantastic as well, by the way. And I really, really appreciated Arsenal's response to conceding as well. They essentially scored straight away both times.
Now,
that's probably not going to happen all season. I do think, as across the weekend, the heat played a factor in this game being a little bit mad. But it's, like I say, one of the most important things that Arteta had to fix was the feeling in the ground.
Yeah.
And it's so positive now, and it makes such a difference.
And that's interesting to dovetail back to Vish, who obviously was there as a Man United fan watching the Arsenal game. It's kind of interesting to think. I'm not taking the piss
here. Vish, who do you support?
Yeah.
Brentford.
Yeah.
No, Brentford, QPR.
But in many ways, what Arteta is doing, and it's still quite early days, but what he's doing here is he's showing a big club how to kind of get out of that funk, get out of that situation where you feel like every aspect of the club is permeated by this chaos and this fucking unprofessionalism. And Man United actually basically need to do the same, don't they? Mm. And it's maybe perhaps a bit encouraging that a manager can come in, be given the time, given the backing, bring in the players that he wants, and just with maybe a handful of players here and there, he can really kind of start to lift everything.
Yeah. But I think it has to get worse before it gets better in those situations. And I think that's where Man United are now. And they have to actually accept that this season might be a little bit like that.
But do you accept that comparison though, Vish?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I also think it started in essence a little bit with Freddie Ljungberg when he gave opportunities in that little mini stint to younger players. But also, you know, it's the work of players like further down. You know, people talk about like the Hale End effect, where it's like you've got these kids there who just needed to play. In a different Arsenal era, Smith Rowe doesn't play. Smith Rowe has that loan at Leipzig. And I appreciate that, you know, he's not starting now, but now he adds to your squad strength.
Yeah, very much so.
And the thing about Jesus as well, if you look at, and it's not just because he plays in the middle between Martinelli and Saka, but he's basically the middle of the Venn diagram in terms of he does what one does, and that is relentless like Martinelli, and he does what the other does, and that is very direct and silky like Saka. And he, you know, you end up having two of each kind of player on the field.
He's also a brilliant finisher, Jesus.
He missed a few on Saturday, but I think
that's the one that looked like was going to be the hat trick goal, where he kind of essentially sort of flicked the ball onto himself, then turned the defender. I think actually, I forget which player it was a Leicester defender, got a foot on it in the end. We thought he'd like got a shot away.
I think it might have been
unbelievable. But the fact that we're even having that conversation is quite remarkable. Such a fluid, mobile striker, and that we've missed that.
And also, I mean, on the Leicester side of the ledger, just very briefly, very static in the transfer market, looking like...
Well, they've signed no one.
They're not signing anyone.
One goalkeeper, Alex Smithies, third choice.
And they've lost a really influential goalkeeper as well.
And actually, Vish and I sort of mentioned this throughout the game, Danny Ward does not look comfortable with his defence yet.
James Madison's goal, though, was
beautiful.
Was excellent.
Keeper's got to save it.
Awful.
Ramsdale is a low-key worry for me.
Really?
There's a lot of quality about him, but he has that in him sometimes to just concede a silly goal out of nowhere.
But he comes across very well in All or Nothing. He comes across very balanced,
As long as his dad wears his lucky hat, it's fine.
Well, absolutely.
He's on the anti-Pickford, basically.
Yeah, but I think he can fix it, but it has to be fixed.
Yeah.
Okay.
You said that like you were his like jilted lover then. I think you can fix it, but it has to be fixed, or I will not be back.
Yeah, it won't be me fixing it. It's better to have loved and lost.
Yeah.
One thing I can't wait to see is former Arsenal defender Tony Adams on Strictly.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my God. This is
another Patreon exclusive, Jules Breach.
This is happening. Tony Adams is going to be on Strictly Come Dancing this year, and it's going to be... hilarious, I think.
It is going to be hilarious.
I think he'd also be quite endearing, though.
He's got to do that training ground move. They've got to allude to that in some way. Does Strictly normally do that kind of thing? Where they'll do a nod?
Will a judge dare call him a donkey? Say that about dancers?
You vote, yeah.
Okay, so could he win it? Not win it, but could he go far on personality, like being a nice guy?
You get public votes and judges' votes, and then they combine.
Can we? Is it too much to ask for Tony to run up to the judging panel and start going cheat, like he did famously to that referee that time?
If he wins it as well, this just sums it all up.
Oh well, I can't wait. Also, just a brief mention of one of the things that rarely happens in football, but when it does, you absolutely have to mention it because there aren't many other better things. Goalkeepers scoring goals.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And in the 92nd minute, QPR's goalkeeper, Senny Dieng, scored an equaliser. It was one of those glorious moments of the weekend.
The great things about it that set it apart from the obvious, are that it was the second phase of play. Yes. He was brave enough to stay there. Courage of his conviction. Then I think he went down the end and made another save.
He made an amazing save.
He could do it all. Find you a man that can do it all, is what I'm saying.
That's what
Ramsdale,
I need.
Aaron Ramsdale, take note.
Tomorrow, Kate's going to bring you the latest episode of The Drop-In, and this one is with one of my favourite people, Glenn Hoddle, just the loveliest man, amazing stories to tell as well. If you've seen one of the photos that we put on the socials, he was dressed like a surfer, but we promise he did actually talk about football. Well worth a listen, that.
He had a kind of pre-shop distressed Nirvana t-shirt on that he'd obviously just bought brand new. Yeah. I don't mind it. I'm not criticising him.
Name five albums with Glenn.
They've not even done five.
Well, there we go. Vish, congratulations for getting through that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I also managed to get him maybe just a little bit angrier than normal. He's normally pretty sedate, is Vish, but I almost riled him up. He was shaking his head a bit, like looking over at Jim, like being quite rolling his eyes a bit. It was actually, can I say, it was my wife-esque.
Yeah?
Very much it was.
Well done.
Thanks.
Well
done.
We're all very happy with ourselves today. It's also boiling, so we're going to go. But thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble. As always, part of the Acast Creator Network. See you next time.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.